Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We are at the Reporters' Roundtable tonight as we talk about the top stories of the week, and boy, do we have a lot of them tonight. Or today, I should say, was the biggest news about abortion rights since the overturning of Roe v. Wade earlier this summer. President Biden signing a new executive order and Kansans defeating a referendum that would have restricted abortion in the state. Also on deck tonight, gun violence in the D.C. metro continues unabated. What's going on with that? President Biden also catching a rebound case of COVID. Climate change and flooding in Kentucky, and finally filling up your gas tank is just a little less painful. As I said, we have a lot to get to tonight. My guests are political analyst Dr. Sharice Nelson and journalist Jamila Bey. If you have a comment, if you have a question about any of the top stories of the week, I want to hear from you right now. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR. Or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Okay, ladies, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
It is a delight to be here.
Okay,
thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely. Always my pleasure. So let's get on this abortion topic right away. Dr. Nelson, yesterday was an interesting political dynamic in Kansas, one of the nation's most conservative states, voting as a result of Roe v. Wade to continue abortion rights. And it's not just so much about abortion in Kansas. There are some bigger issues here. What's your take?
So we first have to remember that although the court had, the court has been tapped to make the decision it made, right?
Right.
So the idea that, amongst conservatives, they are overwhelmingly in the idea of the loss of complete abortion rights is a falsehood. And I think that's something that we have to think about deeply, or that we need to take into consideration is far more nuanced. Now, when you are able to get an abortion, at what stage is far more controversial and is far more the target in the conservative spaces. But the idea of outlawing it completely is not something that people are a fan of, even in conservative circles. So I wasn't as surprised as a lot of people are. When it comes to Kansas, because Kansas was looking at a complete ban, a total ban.
Right.
And that level of a total ban, even in the state of Louisiana, where I'm a professor at Southern University, we had what's called a snapback law when the decision was made, and the governor stayed that law. So the idea that as a country are prepared to take women back into the 50s of getting abortions in the backroom alleys, I just think we're not as far backwards as people think we are.
What do you think about that, Jamila?
Well, first of all, I have to say, go ahead, Toto and Dorothy. I am one of these people. I did not see this coming. I really did not. This vote was... this vote is potentially the referendum of what is going to happen when more states come November have the opportunity to elect congressional officers, elect certainly state officers who either agree with the Supreme Court's ban or they don't. Kansas, I guess the kids say gave me life. Do they still say gave me life? Don't correct me and make me feel bad, please. The fact that the reality exists, that there are people who say, you know, we are the real heartland. These are the people who whipped Trump in 2020, make no mistake. These are people who, think that January 6th is an overblown, hyped up, prosecution to nowhere, a great many of them. I'm not putting words in their mouths. They'll tell you. But they recognize that the autonomy of a human female adult to say, I do not want to have the condition of pregnancy forced upon me, forced to be made upon me, and I should have the right with my doctor to do what we decide. I would totally have to eat crow if I made that bet 2 days ago.
But I would say also that if you look at the demographics of the state, and I used
that
to
that was going
to
be my next point, Harold.
Exactly,
you get the nail on the head.
Yeah, I used to live in Kansas City, Missouri, which is kind of like living in the DMV, in this area. When you're talking about Johnson County, which is the county that immediately abuts Kansas City, Missouri, in Kansas, the most populated county in the state. And then you have the other urban centers. You have Topeka and you have Wichita. You know, where the heaviest population was, that is where the critical votes were. Now, you had literally the central and western part of the state that voted to keep abortion, to keep those restrictive abortion requirements. But the turnout came where the most people were, Dr. Nelson.
Well, and to your point, so that was going to be exactly my point that I think shapes us up for what we are going to see in these midterms elections come November, is that we are going to see I think this abortion issue has diluted in many ways the race conversation or the idea that we're in a race war. I think the war has now turned into urban centers versus rural areas. And I feel like this abortion issue has highlighted the fact that this is becoming or creeping up to be more of the issue, because access is a huge part of the life of someone who lives in an urban center, and the diversity piece of that, right? We're talking about the amount of Blacks, Latinos, people that are Black and brown that live in these areas that you're describing, Harold. And so to me, what this lets us know is that we are going to, in many ways, see a shape up of the rural areas being in a juxtaposition to the more urban centers come November.
Yeah. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. If you have a comment or question, give us a call. Let's go to Vernon. Vernon, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling in, Vernon. What's on your mind?
Yes, I'm calling in reference to the gun violence in D.C.
Well, go right ahead, because that was going to be our next topic. So chime right in. What's on your mind?
Okay, first of all, the gun violence in D.C., the cat's out the bag. If it had been tackled before. But now, a gun will kill. A gun kills anybody. A gun is manufactured to kill. When is the dialogue going to come when it's time to go after the gun manufacturers? Because the majority of the folks, these young folks, majority, who are killing each other now, killing themselves now, they don't manufacture guns. They don't, they just put the guns in their hands and are ill-informed about what to do with them and the purpose of them. So we need to start education and awareness on, first of all, your value as a young person, human being, especially young Black male, your value, your purpose. Where did you go wrong? Where are you off track? We need to tackle some of those issue and begin to retrain these young minds about what's really going on.
Well, Vernon, hold on. You said a lot, and I think you made a couple of important points, and I want my panel to chime in. And Jamila, let me kind of bring some context to what has happened. And over the past week, not only the past week, but just over the past 24 hours, we had a running gun battle between two occupants of two vehicles on I-295 in the middle of yesterday afternoon, driving southbound, I-295, shooting at each other, okay? A child was was hurt by debris, but not seriously. That could have been a horrible, horrible situation. We recently also in Southeast D.C. had what can be described as nothing short of a mass shooting. Six people shot in one incident. One of them was killed. And this keeps going on and on and on and on. The homicide detectives in the district running here, running there. It's a 27-hour day situation. And, you know, Vernon is saying, you know, the guns are killing, but also, you know, we have these young black men who are involved. There are so many moving pieces. What the heck is going on, Jamila?
You know, this is an American problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we in D.C., first time since 2003, saw more than 200 people murdered by gun violence last year. We've reached 100 homicides at the most recent point in a year and, you know, more than a decade just now. There's a program, these violence interrupter programs and what have you. Love them, hate them, think they need more study, whatever. But one thing they do is they talk to people who have perpetrated gun violence. They talk to people who are not just the academics and researchers and not only the law enforcement and prosecutorial folks. Some of the suggestions that come from folks who are incarcerated, have recently been incarcerated around gun violence include these are economic issues. You need to make certain that it's not just a summer job, minimum wage pay kind of thing, particularly for young adults. You need to consider ways of paying them wages that allow them to do well and live. There's the idea of gun exchanges. You bring in a gun, no questions asked, you get studio time and go to record. Now, I have to admit, I'm not one who knows how many, you know, fledgling musicians who need studio time we have in the city who would otherwise be out committing violence with guns. But the idea that we are seeing something out of the ordinary, I very much want to push back against that. We are seeing gun violence around this country. We are seeing angry people around this country. And the reality is that whether you call it post-pandemic or after COVID or whatever it is, we are in a place in history that we have not been before. Yes, you can go back to the 1918 influenza, pandemic, but the gun violence after that wasn't the same thing because we didn't have the level of weapons we have now. This is a new time and we need new solutions. I will concede that. And asking people who have been convicted and have been in the system, I'm inclined to listen to them too.
Dr. Nelson.
First off, my son, although I'm a professor down in Louisiana, my son lives and spends the school year in Southeast D.C., right? So I'm very invested in those neighborhoods in that quadrant of the city because my son lives there. And I will say that my husband, who's a pastor, they have started and participated in these programs called Return Resistance. And the idea is similar to what Julia is talking about, is going into the neighborhood and then actually having a conversation about these beefs. So what is the beef actually over, right? And almost all the time, as Jamila has said, these beefs lead back to economics. And people think that the economics are always drug-related. Oftentimes, this economic activity is not drug-related. And so it's the lack of opportunity. And what has happened, I really truly believe, Harold, is that during the pandemic, what we saw was the wealth gap in the United States widened. It has exploded. And so while many of the people at the bottom are getting pinched with the inflation, and we all already understood the wealth gap has exploded, you are not giving people that are at the bottom very many options as then to what to use, which is violence. And we also understand in this country that we can't get a weapons ban across the finish line. We can't stop gun manufacturers their lobbying to then have AK-47s that shoot up children. So we are sending the message over and large that gun violence is not something that we even see from a national perspective as serious enough to do anything about. So if we understand that there's an economic problem, we understand that there is now a gap in who has and who doesn't, and we also understand that inflation is making it so that everyday people are struggling to live, then violence is the only other option, and the amount of guns and the proliferation of guns in this country makes it easy for that to be the alternative.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about some of the top stories of the week at the Reporters Roundtable. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Again, 202-319-7810. We'll be taking your phone calls all the way up until about 8 o'clock. Right before I go to a break, I will say to both of you that the issue of gun violence, as we have seen here in the DMV, for example, isn't just about teenagers. We have seen these violent gun-related crimes committed by adults, people who one would expect in the best of circumstances know the difference between right and wrong. This may not be economic. It may not be territorial. It may not have to do with drugs. It may have to do with people just having some really bad attitudes and also having access to guns. And that's just, and certainly we can talk about that a little bit more, on the other side. But I would like to hear what both of you have to say about that point in just a bit. We're going to take a break, but don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. If you're on the phone, hang on, do not hang up. You will be able to hear the program on the other side. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're at the Reporters Roundtable tonight as we talk about some of the top stories of the week. My guests are political analyst Dr. Sharice Nelson and journalist Jamila Bey. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We have already had a chance to discuss the wider implications of the abortion rights issue in Kansas. President Biden also signing a second executive order trying to extend abortion rights where he can through executive order. Also, we're talking about gun violence in the DMV. We're going to touch on the rebound case of COVID that the president has, and what's going on in Kentucky and all of this flooding, the climate change, and finally, of course, your gas tank. Again, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before the break, I was commenting, Jamila and Dr. Nelson, about the fact that the gun violence in the DMV may not necessarily always have to do with very young people. Some of these perpetrators of gun violence are adults. It may have nothing to do with drugs. It may not have anything to do with neighborhood beef. Sometimes it's just people who have access to guns, who have some really bad attitudes and just don't know the best way to react. Jamila, your thoughts about that?
I would argue that in this time of economic turmoil, even if you yourself are not impacted by the fact that, baby formula, when you can get it, is more expensive than it's ever been, that what used to fill up your tank and what used to fill your fridge, you're paying out 30 to even, you know, 100%, depending on how, what kind of access you have with your money. We, the American collective, are poorer, sicker, angrier without the access that we have been accustomed to having, and that makes people violent. Let's look to history. When it was like this in France, they got violent too. They just chose to look upward to the castle, as opposed, not that there was no interpersonal, intra-class fighting. They just took it to the top. We've seen this in history before. This is not a new thing. When you have a widening economic gap and you have people who are feeling that they cannot sustain the lives, however meager, to which they've become accustomed, they get mad and mad people get violent. Now we have semi-automatic rifles. Now we have handguns. And our laws say, well, what you gonna do? You can have them with as much as you want. Asterisk, that's not what the law actually says, but something like that. People who are angry will shoot each other. That is what we have.
Right. Well, that's my point, because if we, let's look at this incident that happened at the Mandarin Hotel, where, right. Shatiri Weems, this is not a teenager. This is a businesswoman who is charged with attempted murder and shooting her husband. Now, this is, she told police that she shot him. She went to the hotel and she was armed. She was not with him before going to the hotel, according to court documents. He was at the hotel. She went down there. She was armed. And just like you said, people who are angry and who have access to firearms, there's more of a chance that they may use those firearms when those of us who are in the cold, rational space will say, instead of going down there, why don't you just call the police if you believe that your husband was molesting children, instead of going down and confronting him with a gun. And I think that's the question.
I'll defer to Dr. Nelson. I have a very unpopular opinion on that one.
Well, we welcome unpopular opinions, but Dr. Nelson, go right ahead.
So let's first say, calling the police, and I'm not here to, I want to be very careful with how I present this. But we all know that calling the police means what exactly? I mean, calling the police as a black person in America is a toss up of a situation anytime you give them a call. You have to take into a lot of things into consideration when you're calling the cops, because they're not necessarily to protect us. So I want to start at that baseline. The second piece on this about showing up to shoot your husband at this hotel because you suspect him to molest children, I think that as my husband's father would say, domestic issues are complicated, and to normalize domestic issues are complicated. We have not sat in that marriage and understood the dynamics of it or the nuances of it. But I think your point about angry people having access is an important one. Mm-hmm. But again, I would say, the idea in this country that your Second Amendment right trumps the fact, and pun definitely intended, trumps the fact that rational behavior is what we're after. Because it's not rational to allow somebody to have a military style weapon, and the fact that it's been used several times with innocent people, and yet we still can't get legislation around it. That's not rational. So this idea that we're in a rational space to begin with, Harold, I think is a bridge too far. So again, access is our problem, right? We know that there are these other triggers. We know that economic stressors are an issue, that domestic issues can become an issue. We know these things. However,
We do not see these things happening in France. We do not see these things happening in England. Why? Because the access is extremely limited. And so until we get serious as a country about limiting access to firearms collectively, then we're going to, then these minute issues, or not minute, but these pop-up kind of issues are then just just the result of the overall gaping wound that we will not sew up.
And the
Dr. Nelson, I would like to audit your course. Absolutely.
So what's your unpopular opinion, Jamila?
That was not a gun crime. That woman would have found some way to do that man in if she did not have access to a weapon. People who are alleged and believed with some credibility to have harmed children, particularly sexually.
Mm-hmm.
There is a long history of them going missing, getting poisoned. Read Maya Angelou's autobiography. There are ways. That woman had an issue with what that man did. The gun was incidental. Now, it wasn't incidental for the cases of reported crime within the District of Columbia proper. However, that was not a gun crime. That was an entitlement issue that we see amongst usually men who feel they have access to smaller, weaker bodies than their own.
Yeah. It is, more broadly speaking, goes to the heart. It was at the heart of it. It was another gun-related crime in D.C., and not necessarily the kind that we have seen so much of in some of our more underserved communities. This but it was still gun crime, which goes back to the what the heck is going on question. Let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Joshua calling from Waldorf. Thanks for calling, Joshua. What's on your mind? Joshua, are you there? Give me a call back if you can. Let's go to Juanita calling from D.C. Juanita, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Harold. This is Juanita Overton.
Hey.
I'm a native Washingtonian, born and raised in Southeast Washington, D.C. I'm currently running a program in my old neighborhood, Congress Park. It's called AIR. That acronym stands for Accountability, Integrity, and Respect.
Mm-hmm.
It is a program for the youth. And I'm a recording artist. I'm an author. But this program is geared towards teaching the youth how to create music. It's a government-funded program.
So let me stop you, Juanita, because I don't want to do a commercial for your program. I want your thoughts on the violence in the community. So let's have at it. Let me know what you think. What's going on?
All right. Well, specifically, like I said, I work with the youth. I put them in a roundtable discussion last week, and I had one question I posed to about 12 young men, age range 13 to 21.
Mm-hmm.
And the one question I asked those guys was, what did they think would stop the gun violence, or how could they stop the gun violence?
Wow, great question. What are they saying?
And you know what those guys said? There's no way to stop it. I asked them what were the beefs about, and they said, honestly, they didn't even know what a bunch of the beefs were. They have a bunch of old, ongoing beefs between other neighborhoods that grandfathered in before them. Something has happened before, and then this is going on. And also, if someone kills one of their men, they have to retaliate, is what one of the youngest guy, the smallest guy in the room said, that he has to retaliate. If somebody does something to his man, that they have to get back. So it's an ongoing cycle. And, to be honest, I have the program, and it's free, and it's a whole bunch of opportunities, but they just don't want to show up some days.
Yeah. What are you hearing there, Jamila?
It's idle. It's idleness is part of it. It's access is part of it. People who are mentally healthy and have ways of expressing their anger and frustration do not kill each other. you know, whether it's, you know, youth sports programs and midnight basketball leagues. I like boxing more than basketball, but that's just me.
Mm-hmm.
It requires a number of concerted efforts, and these are policy issues. If we are serious about solving the gun issue in this country, which I argue that we, the collective American, we are not, because that ain't how we vote, it requires recognizing that getting rid of the easy access means that it's going to deprive somebody of their, you know, God-given right to shoot anything that he feels like he can shoot, usually a he. We need to get to the fabric of the founding of this nation, which gave any land-owning white male the ability to conquer, take, steal, whatever, and the gun was the method by which he did so. And then he'd later create laws to make it okay after the fact. We know this in our history. There's a lot of people don't want us teaching that, but I'm going to defer to the professor here because I could be wrong. That's what my understanding of the issue means that we need to take into account. And, I do teach, but I don't teach history. So I'm going to defer and see if, you know, am I on?
Let's see what Dr. Nelson has to say about what Juanita was saying. Go right ahead.
I would say it this way. So self-ideation is a big issue here. And what does self-ideation mean? How are young people see themselves? And I would argue that we believe that because they have more access to be in conversations with one another and more access to the world abroad, they're not really understand that they feel a particular way that they're having a difficult time expressing. And what I know for a fact is a lot of especially our black and brown kids, a lot of them do not see their lives as valuable. And why is that? It's policy related, right? It's the neighborhood I grow up in. It is what I have access and availability to. If I live in a food desert and the only place that for me to get groceries is at the corner store, then there's a conditioning that happens over time. So programs that come into neighborhoods to try to break that ideation, they're already fighting an uphill battle. And then once we then add on open door access, right, this access issue, it just becomes even more difficult. But I think self-ideation is a large part of this because black and brown students, or especially black men, are watching themselves be commodified, right, without the ability to then reap the benefits of that commodification. And so after a position at a time, I then set up my own set of rules for how there is to live. And that is the understanding of there is a respect and there's a code. And if you get my man, I'm going to come get your man. Why? Because from a self-ideation perspective, I don't see that is the code that I'm living by because that's where I've placed value. And I have not been given any other reason to place value in any other place.
Juanita, thank you so much. Before we go to another topic, I did want to speak about something that occurred to me. We were actually throwing this issue around yesterday on National Night Out. I remember when I was a kid, and you talk about code. If there's a code in your community, whomever lays down the code, I think. I remember when I was a kid, I don't know how old I was. I may have been 10 or 11 or maybe as old as 12. And I asked my father, and that's the issue right there. My father was an ever-present influence, in my life. And that is not always the case, as we see in the lives of these young people. And that's not painting too broad of a brush, I would say. Some do, some don't. But I said, Dad, I want a BB gun. And I remember he said, what for? And I said, well, to shoot the birds. Because that's what, kids back way back in the ancient times when I was a kid, that's kind of what they did. They, you know, they used BB guns. They shot at birds and squirrels. But I remember my father said, what do you want to shoot the birds for? He said, leave the birds alone. No, you can't have a BB gun. I still don't own a gun. And I'm 58. So, you know, the code that my father laid down was, no, you don't get a gun to shoot the birds or anyone. BB gun, pellet gun, whatever. No, you can't have one. You can't have access to a gun at 10, 11, 12. And he never said, well, when you get old enough, you can get it on your own. He never even said that. That was his code. No, you don't get a gun. My father was a Southerner. Everybody, he had a gun. Grandfather had a gun. Mother's father had a gun. Uncles had a gun. There were guns everywhere. I knew they were there, never touched them. Why? Because I think early my father instilled in me, no, you can't have a gun. Maybe that helps. I don't know. Take it for what it's worth. I do want to move on to this issue about, you know, President Biden getting this rebound case of COVID. If you don't believe that COVID is everywhere by now, Jamila, I don't know what you're going to believe. He says he feels fine. He's isolating again. He was on Paxlovid when he came back from Massachusetts. But here we are again, and double boosted and the like. This is really something that I think this is an example of something we all are going to have to continue to live with.
Indeed. Yeah, I mean, I think this. I think the idea that COVID is going away is a supreme fallacy. COVID has become our, you know, influenza, right? And I think the difference is that the more we learn about the virus, the more we understand. The more we understand about it, the better then we can get information and treat people. I think the other problem that we're having is that I think there was some mismessaging in the beginning about this idea that if you get vaccinated, you will not get the virus. And I think that's made a certain population of people in the United States feel like, well, if I can get the virus, whether I get vaccinated or not, then there's no point of getting it. Well, yeah, there is, because most of the people that are dying of COVID are unvaccinated people. And so I think the salient point here again is the idea of that it's not going anywhere, that it's a part of our normalized lives, but what are we going to do as far as messaging, especially in the Black community around this as a normalization tool? How do we use this as outbreak of the president to say, look, even the most powerful man in the free world contracted this, and how do we then convince more and more people in our communities who we know have pre-existing health conditions that make it so that if they are to contract COVID unvaccinated, that their likelihood to die spikes? So how do we, that's what it instantly made me think about. How do I, in Southern Louisiana, get more and more Black people in the neighborhood that I service as a professor at Southern University, how do I get more and more of them to then go get a vaccination and to potentially live?
And here's the thing, Jamila, this, as you know, as they say, we outside right now. this is summer, you know, and we are in the midst of it. People are traveling and trying to enjoy themselves, but COVID is still here. But the big thing is, it's Game of Thrones in just a few months. Winter is coming. And we are, you know, not only are we going to be dealing with, you know, the flu as we dealt with it just last year, but now we have all of these variants that continue to evolve, and as we no longer are outside and are moving back in and in closer quarters, I suspect that we are going to see COVID really make a, you know, make a comeback, whether your last name is Biden, Bay, Nelson, or Fisher.
Indeed. Now, you know, I want to directly speak to you for a moment, Professor Nelson, because there are some things that I have actually employed. You know, I am not an epidemiologist, but my baby sister is. And I am very good at messaging. And so there were some effective ways of talking to various populations. One of them, and I'll just put my own business out in the street, encountered a young man in a restaurant in the thick of the COVID, you know, young black man, very good looking. And I pointed that out to him and I said, you know, I bet the ladies very much like you. You don't have to take my word for it, but you need to look up what happens to the reproductive organs of men who contract COVID.
Oh, my
especially
goodness.
If they get a case of what's called long COVID. Don't take my word for it. Look it up. There's research around it.
I'm not talking about the research. I'm talking about the messaging. All of a sudden, every man on this program now, you have their full attention.
But that's the point, Harold. We need to get their attention some kind of way.
Exactly. That's exactly my point.
Yes. You know, you're I'm so healthy and I am covered in the blood of the lamb and blah, blah. Okay, fine. You know how you take your 10,000 steps a day, sister? People with long COVID can't make it up and down their stairs every day anymore. You know, and I'm sure that you know that many of them are covered in the blood and sanctified and too blessed to be stressed and all of that. But the reality is that your God gave the scientists the ability to come up with something that makes it so that the thing that can kill you ain't going to kill you no more. I'm going to say this and then I'm going to be quiet. Every virus, if you think about a virus and personified, it wants to do one of two things. It wants to kill you. Or it wants to spread and be multiplied. If it kills you, like the Ebola victim, well, it can't spread no more. You know, the body of the Ebola victim has to be burned or buried deep because that body is still contagious. But then that virus can't spread no more. So like this variant that we're seeing that is rebounding on people, it's highly transmissible. Don't tend to kill you, but it means that the ladies who like you a lot might not think that you can hang in there with them. Right. It means that your ability to walk and do and be a strong fit for the, you might not be able to kneel and stand up and kneel and stand up at service no more. You might have to sit the whole time.
Mm.
This we know, and vaccination prevents those outcomes. Get a shot.
Yeah.
I'm be quiet.
Okay. Leroy. Calling from D.C., you call back. Leroy, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I'm calling about the gun violence.
Yeah, go right ahead, quick.
My question is, how do we get the ammo from the guns off the street? Guns without ammo, you won't kill nobody because you got no ammo. So we need to go after the companies that make these ammos, these bullets.
Six of one, half dozen of the other, Dr. Nelson. I'll let you respond to that real quick.
Yeah, so ammo, I love the ammo question, right? Because the ammo question is almost like the chicken and the egg question, right? And for those that believe, I believe my God would put a chicken on the earth before he put an egg on the earth. And in many ways, that's the same thing with this ammo question. And the bigger problem with it all is that the ammo folks are in bed with the gun folks. So you're not removing one without the other, right? We saw ammo shortages right after President Biden was elected. And yet what happened? Ammo was restocked, right, in many ways because guns become feckless without that ammo. And both of these companies and these owners are tied into one another if they're not the same. So, yes, I understand the ammo argument, right? But we also have to remember that people are now savvy enough to then make their own ammo. So, again, access across the board about guns is our ultimate problem. We need, and I didn't want to get academic on us, but the idea of the Second Amendment, we have misread it and taken it out of its context for the commodification of guns. And that is the bottom line. And we have to decide, are profits more important or is the safety and the health of our citizens more important? And that's just a sum. That's just a sum of it.
Leroy, I appreciate your comment, but I've got to move on. I'm running out of time. Real quick, flooding in Kentucky, dozens of people dead over the course of a week, and we've got a firestorm out in the West Coast, and the weather is crazy. Jamila, the conversation about climate change continues to be elevated. You still have some people who doubt it. You have true believers, but I would say that the deadly ramifications of what we've seen over the past week have raised this question, and the debate on Capitol Hill to a point where people are standing up and paying attention.
The way that my new friends in Kansas stood up and said, no, you will not, is the same way that Americans at large have to stand up to industry, stand up to our legislators and say, you will not continue to give the tax breaks to these industries that poison our water, that kill our animals, that kill our people and kill our planet. There are those who feel that it will never change because, you know, the man has dominion over the beast of land and sea and fracking or whatever it is. I'm not real up on the fracking part of the Bible, but ideological thinking, magical thinking does not work. It is time to put some adults in office. It is time to put some scientists in office. It's time to put in office the people who did what we needed to do 20 years ago. You don't hear about a hole in the ozone layer anymore because the scientists got together and worked it out and put in place mechanisms that were adopted by legislators so industry couldn't circumvent them and continue to put into the atmosphere chlorofluorocarbons that would eat up the ozone layer protecting humans. It is time to look at this and say, you know what? I don't want to burn up. I don't want to drown. And the food scarcity and the wars we're going to see around the war because of food and water scarcity, some of that cannot be abated. But what we can do is start from here, and it matters in November.
Yeah, we're definitely going to need to continue to pay attention. That's going to be the last word for this conversation. Dr. Sharice Nelson and Jamila Bay, thank you so much for this muscular conversation. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much for having us.
Sure. That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, August 3rd. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.